Hey guys, my guest today, Stephen Mira, is going to be talking about Project Doorway. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing? I hope you said great. Nice weather here, low 70s, loving it. I wish it would stay like this, all this spring weather. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you do think you have a paranormal problem, we can get to you. It might take us a bit, but we can get to you. California is a huge state. And in the case that it might take us more than a couple days to get to you, we do have psychics on staff who could phone you and talk about what may or may not be going on. And in most cases, they can settle down, they can settle down the energy long enough for us to get out there. All right, that being said, you can find us everywhere. Check out all your social media, and we're there. Okay, just Google California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team, California Haunts Radio, and you'll find us. All right, if you're watching from Facebook today, and a lot of you are, please feel free to hit that follow button if you haven't done so already. Also, join us in the conversation. That's the whole point. Like the back says, come join the conversation. Join us in the conversation in the chat room, and show us some love. Oops, there we go. Big news day. Hang on, everybody. Okay, there we go. Big news day. Everybody knows what's going on in the news, so I don't have to say much more. All my neighbors are watching the news, obviously. Anyway, so, yeah, be sure to give us, show us some love, send us some thumbs up, give me some smiley face, some of those happy heart things. Please be sure to do that. Same thing with YouTube. I'm looking for subscribers over there, and we're almost going to hit that 1,000 mark very soon here. Okay, very, very soon here. Really excited about that. But if you haven't subscribed already and you're watching from YouTube, please feel free to do so. I really would appreciate it. We're 127 away from our 1,000, and I'm really getting stoked. And what you got to remember, it's not just about YouTube numbers. We've got like 3,000 followers on Facebook, as well as right now I'm looking at around 3,000 downloads of our RSS feed. So I'm really excited about that. You guys are really starting to catch up and do this. So I really appreciate it. But be sure to do that. Be sure to make it a point to do that. Okay. There's one thing I got to announce really quick before I start the show. I need team members. Open recruitment for California Haunts team members. We have a few investigations coming up, and I'm looking for team members. But you have to go through training before you're even considered. And I keep dropping off. It's going to be one of those days. Give me a minute. Okay. So if you're interested in joining the team, you do have to take Ghost Hunting 101 class with me. And so to access that, go to the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team Meetup and sign up there. Okay? All right. Now we can shift in. My guest has been on before. I loved him the last time he was on. You guys have requested to bring him back on, and I decided to do it this week. We're going to be talking about this thing called Project Doorway and UFOs, and I think he can explain it better than I can. So I'm going to bring him in, Stephen Mira. Here we go.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm excited to have you back. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Been very busy doing research, but it's very exciting times we're living in at the moment.
Tell me a little bit about your research that you're doing.
Okay, so I work along with my colleague, Barry Fitzgerald. Now, you might know Barry. Barry Fitzgerald was the lead investigator for Ghost Hunters International. He's been involved in a number of documentaries and TV work around the world. We came together about maybe 10 years ago, and we wanted to conduct some scientific studies into the UFO phenomena. Uh-huh. And after spending so many years, I mean, I think I'm 41 years for me in the field. I think Barry's probably around about 38 years in the field now. And we wanted some answers, just like many other people. We really do. And the narratives we were given about the UFO phenomenon, we just didn't feel was right, didn't fit. So what we did is we conducted scientific studies and research all around the world, visiting certain locations, conducting experiments. And with the findings that we had, we started to release information. Then I was invited on to a number of think tanks around the world. And some of them are very esteemed think tanks regarding people in certain businesses, associations, ex-military, government programs, come together to discuss what we currently know about the subject of UFOs. And we realized, myself and Barry, that once we started putting out this information, and we called the research Project Doorway, and there's a good reason for that, we started to get a lot of interest from people. I remember having a first phone call with a gentleman who was on another computer, and he was in connections with somebody called the Advanced Working Group. I believe these were ex-military people, which were researchers or people that worked in government, certain departments regarding the subject of UFOs, wanted to ask me a number of questions. And the first questions he asked me was, did I work for the Department of Defense or CIA or the MI5 or MOD? And I said, none of them. No, no. I said, why are you asking these questions? And I realized very quickly that they were aware of some of the information we knew to be correct. But they were working on, should we say, the non-public domain, only from the inside. But we're working in the public domain. So I think you're quite curious how we got the information. Well, we got the information from the research we did. We came to the same conclusions. And it basically started back in about 8 years ago. We knew the terminology about UFOs, the ETs, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, will change. The narrative will start to change and shift as we push forward. We knew it was coming. We didn't realize it was going to be 8 years later, but now we're in that position now where the narrative is changing. The references to ETs have been dropped aside and we're using the term NHI, which is non-human intelligences. Mm-hmm. The subject of interdimensional phenomena is certainly more prominent now. And slowly the narrative is starting to change because over the last 70, 80 years, we've been fed a false narrative about the subject of UFOs. You might ask, how do we come to those conclusions? How do we know this? Well, when talking to leading scientists, people within the SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, we asked about, you know, the activity in space. It was quite an unusual remark. They said, space is unusually quiet. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. So where are all these UFOs coming from? So we did a statistical survey, and we involved as many countries on the planet as possible. Now, some of them we couldn't get information from because they don't collate the information. Some of them don't share information. But from the information we did get from around the world, we calculated approximately the UFO seen within a period of 24 hours, around about every 15 seconds. And that varies between 10 and 20. Mm-hmm. Out of that, you've got to be conservative, but out of that, you've got to say, well, okay, some of them might be misidentifications, some of them are hoaxes. But clearly, though, a huge amount exist. You know, there's a huge amount remain. So where are they all coming from? Well, if they're all traversing backwards and forwards to Earth, we would expect a superhighway of traffic. And there isn't. There is no superhighway of traffic. Though that we do get some things in the, you know, in Earth's atmosphere and outside of it, we do get some things sometimes, but nothing like the amount that are being witnessed around the world on a regular basis, on a 24-hour period. So we wanted to know, okay, so if they're not coming, traversing backwards and forwards to Earth on a superhighway of traffic, where are they coming from? So we started to do surveys and check into locations of where the most significant UFO experiences had ever taken place. And we listed about 2,000 of them. And what we did is we cross-referenced them in association to the environmental and geological readings of the land. And what we noticed was is that there's a geological connection that's involved with the UFO phenomena. Most of them, if not all of them, when they suddenly appear or manifest, or there's a significant incident that takes place in certain locations, they're happening in regions which are referred to as positive magnetic regions. Now, it's interesting because when you start to look into positive magnetic regions, you start to realize, you know, many, many events are taking place there, significant ones, world-renowned incidents. Mm-hmm. Plus, not only that, but there's a heightened amount of paranormal phenomena taking place in those locations, as well as cryptid sightings and, strangely enough, profound disappearances. Because the national parks throughout the US and Canada, if you cross-reference the work, for instance, David Pollardi's missing 411, which is amazing work he's done. If you cross-reference the locations of these profound disappearances, they're seemingly mostly in positive magnetic regions, and we don't think that's by chance. So we continued to do the work, and we needed to wait to get to hold of some specialized equipment. Now, the equipment we had to obtain were things like a time displacement meter, you know, something that can measure durations or, you know, latencies in time in association to UFO encounters. And what we discovered was, is that on these certain locations, some of them also incorporate ancient sites around the world, interestingly enough, that when phenomena has been witnessed and experienced, and if you can get there fast enough, on occasion you will get readings of displacement in time. Because what has been reported is that these UFOs are seemingly just appearing as if they're just switched on like a light bulb and appear. They're not seen to track in from a location. They just seem to manifest and then de-manifest. And that's very interesting because about 70% of sightings are associated to manifestations, dematerialization and materialization process of UFOs. So because we've been so heavily involved in the paranormal, we went back and looked at some of the research and experiments that we conducted in parapsychological sciences. And we were involved in a poltergeist infestation that took place in the UK some years back. And there was a mug, a kitchen mug, that had seemingly disappeared and apported itself to another room. Well, lucky for us, we were able to analyze the apported mug. What we did is we cross-referenced it against another's exact mug from the same collection. Now, this was a collection of four mugs that had been purchased at Christmas time, only 3 months earlier. So we were able to take the sample mug and the apported mug for analysis. Now, we had to make a mark on the apported mug because really you couldn't tell any difference. You know, they feel the same, they weigh the same, they look the same. But whilst it was under analysis, what we discovered was that the apported mug on a computer system, when measuring against the test sample, couldn't even recognize it. It couldn't even recognize it was the mug that left. We thought, well, that's very unusual. What differences are there? Well, there was a massive diathermic alteration had taken place in the mug. And when we got the results back, we thought, we'd seen this diathermic alteration before, this effect. So we started to look through the UFO files that we had, and we couldn't find it. And that's because it didn't lie in there. It lied somewhere else. So eventually, when going through these files, we found our paranormal case of the poltergeist infestation, the results that we got matched the same results in a UFO case. It was a UFO that had seemed to manifest close to the ground. People passing by, witnesses in driving vehicles, saw this object just seemingly, boom, appear. It was close to the ground, it was there for several minutes, and then it seemed to shrink into itself and just disappear. But it did affect the plants. And on the ground, and the affected plants were stunted and they looked unusual. So a scientific team came out and took samples of those plants. It was known as a plant biological traumatology test. The results that the plants had undergone a massive diathermic alteration. The very same, by the looks of it, the very same diathermic alteration that we have in the research of the apported mug. So we came to the conclusion, theorizing that the manifestation of a UFO and the manifestation of an apport might be utilizing the very same physics here. So what we realized then is that we started to look, instead of breaking these subjects into different compartments, because we have what the problem is, we have compartmentalization between the subjects. You know, the paranormal guys don't really deal much with the UFO guys. Mm-hmm. The UFO guys don't really deal much with the paranormal guys. Mm-hmm. But we have to break those subjects down, because when we're looking for certain answers in the subjects of ufology or the paranormal, sometimes they don't lie within that subject. They fall outside the subject. So what we did is we broke all down the walls, all the compartmentalization, we collapsed it, and we brought it all together and referred to it as phenomenology. And it actually started to make better sense, that the phenomena of UFOs are very paranormally orientated. The subject of manifestation and materialization, plus the capabilities of metaphysical phenomena. Because UFOs have been seen to traverse through solid matter, even into volcanoes and hillsides, into the ground. This is at a time when they don't often get picked up on radar. But then, on some occasions, they are solid. They are picked up on radar. When they land, they make physical traces, marks on the ground. The phenomena of the occupants, they can seemingly walk through walls. You know, they can pass right through physical matter. Now, these are the attributes of paranormal phenomena. And you know as well as I do, dealing with paranormal phenomena, is that we see apparitions walking through walls. Mm-hmm. And yet, sometimes they're very physical in nature. But sometimes they can physically touch you. So it seems that, you know, they can be varied. So the paranormal phenomena seems to be, in many cases, metaphysical in nature. So is the UFO phenomena. So we started to realize that the UFO phenomena, if it's not extraterrestrial, then where's it coming from? And we fall into the locations of where these manifestations took place. And it goes back thousands upon thousands of years. This subject of the UFOs and, you could say, communications with the occupants or deities, they'll have thousands and thousands of variations of these things. But if you research the phenomena, as my friend Barry would say, and not the mask, the phenomena gives it away. It's the same phenomena over the thousands and thousands of years, but the mask is forever changing. It could be the greys, it could be the humanoids, it could be reptilians, hairy beings, small beings, robotics, you name it, anything goes. They're forever changing the mask they present. But the phenomena seems to stay the same in all cases throughout thousands of years. Now, we are aware that there are specialists that know about this type of work and are in the same subjects that we are, but not within the public domain. Myself and Barry are in the public domain, and we're at the top of that area of research regarding that narrative shift. Over the last 18 months in the US, there's been lots of talk and UFO congressional hearings and lots of different things. And the narrative is starting to change. It started with researcher and investigator Leslie Keene. Now, she's done a number of television shows. She's quite well known, and she's known with the New York Times, Washington Post. And she came out last year and said that UFOs constitutes the paranormal. It has paranormal and supernatural connotation to it. It's callable one. And then we start to have NASA. NASA came out in September last year and said, we conclude that we know that UFOs kind of are seen and reported and witnessed and photographed, filmed by the general public, also filmed by military pilots, but the evidence that we've got doesn't show them to be extraterrestrial. And the reason being is because, like I said right at the beginning, they're not seeing all this stuff happening back to people. It's there. But so they're saying there is a phenomenon, in a sense, but they don't believe it's extraterrestrial. Now, that's interesting, because if you go back to the very first time that was referenced, it was in 1977, none other by Hynek. Professor Hynek. Now, Alan Hynek, who worked for Project Blue Book, eventually concluded in 1977 at a specialized meeting, he didn't believe there was enough evidence to support that they are extraterrestrial in nature. They're coming from somewhere else. And also at that time, the Blue Book had listed over 12 million variations in the UFO phenomenon. And Professor Jacques Vallée, who's also a very well-known researcher in the field, he claimed also exactly the same thing, that there doesn't seem to be enough evidence to support that these are extraterrestrial in nature. They're coming from somewhere else. And the millions and millions of variations is because there's no base model for this phenomena. It can change its appearance at will and interact at will, sometimes physically, sometimes as if they're not physical. So then we go back to the parapsychological tests and experiments we've been involved in over the years. There was one very famous one in the UK in the 1990s called the Stoll experiment. Now, during their experiments, and very similar to our experiments, when dealing with communications with these, I can only call them non-human intelligences. They're not male, they're not female. The voices come by direct voice phenomena, just like many times you would do around a seance. But they're seemingly electronic, so you can't really put your finger on if they're male or female. But they claim to be non-human. And sometimes we also realize that there's deception is involved, and sometimes they'll tell us things that really don't seem to be truthful.
Right.
They provided information to us, and when we've gone to do the research, there's no evidence of it, so we don't believe they were telling us the truth. Sometimes they do seemingly tell us the truth. But when conducting those experiments, like the Stoll experiment, there was a situation where communication had been taking place, and it took some time to do that because you have to change your systems. It's like fine-tuning your circle. You know, you want the right people, and you measure it by how well that experience is, how good it work. And eventually, after maybe 3 or 4 months, you get the right circle, and then you push through the spiritual contact, push through the poltergeist type disturbances that might occur, into requesting communications with non-human intelligences. Eventually, if you've done this right over the methodology, it takes a bit of time, you can open up a channel of communication with these things. Now, sustainability is always interesting because sorry about that. That was Barry Fitzgerald ringing me.
Oh, there you are.
That was strange. strange. These things happen. So the communications were really interesting. And what we found was they wanted to demonstrate metaphysical phenomena. So there was a glass jar on the table. And it was only so small, but it moved across the table about maybe 5 or 6 inches. It rolled, you could hear it move across the physical table, and we were told to move it back. So we picked it up, it was picked up and moved back to 6 inches. Then again, it moved another 6 inches. The researchers were told again by an electronic voice to pick up the vase and move it back. But when you went to pick it up, the hand went right through it. They could see it. They could see it. It was in our reality. It cast shadow. It even cast shadow. And yet, you could not touch it. It was really, really weird to see that. And then, eventually, another voice comes and said, move it back. And we went to pick it up, And when they picked it up, it was physical again. I could move it back. They wanted to demonstrate that they can create metaphysical phenomena around things. There was also balls of light. Now, if we would have seen these, Charlotte, in a paranormal investigation, we'd say they're paranormal in nature. They're about the size of a tennis ball, some of them a little bit smaller, very brilliantly light. And they'd float around, move, and seemingly move intelligently, and then suddenly, it would bounce 3 times along the table, boom, boom, boom. But onto the third one, it went through the table, up through the table, down through the table, back up, and then boom, boom, boom again. Again, it's showing that they can create metaphysically, they can be physical 1 minute and not physical the next. This is the same phenomena that we're seeing in the UFO phenomena. This is when that sometimes they're picked up on radar, sometimes we might see them, but they're not in our reality. Just like that vase. Yeah, we thought, oh, it's casting a shadow. It's really there. And yet you couldn't pick the thing up for a good minute or so until they allowed you to. Now, UFOs are skirting our reality. We see them, but they're not affected by the physicalities of our reality. They go past planes and there's no wake. Now, you should get a wake just like two boats passing in the ocean. You'll feel it. No wake. And yet they're seen. They seemingly go into water and there's no wake. There's nothing seen, no disturbance in the water. And yet they go into it. It doesn't cause them to reduce speed. There's no inertia effect by hitting water. Because this phenomena sometimes in a UFO incident, we see them, but they're not truly, fully in our reality. Exactly the same thing as the vase talking about. It's the same phenomena, but it's presented in a different way. Now, when we realized this, we thought, oh, well, okay, well, now we can start looking into about how we consciously connect with this phenomena. When we realized and started doing work in regarding communications with non-human intelligences around the seance table, now that's interesting because the very first entities that we were referred to as non-humans, thinking that they might be aliens or whatever they are, were around the seance table. They were not around associated to UFOs. The first incidents took place around seance tables and many other places around the world, in caves, surprisingly enough, are geological locations where these things have been seen, presumed to be deities, and you know, people go to pray to them. They're in the thousands all over the world. If you know, and Barry, my good friend, he illuminated to me that if we just take, for instance, just take one case, for instance, Lourdes. Now, Lourdes is a place where people visit in the millions. A very religious location. People go there to pray. They go there to worship. They go there to get healed in holy waters. People go there in the millions every year. And there's a cave, and at the entrance of this cave, there's a statue of Our Lady, Virgin Mary. But Saint Benedict, who saw this. She's walking past the cave one day, saw this thing, and she was very, very surprised. Now, what the church did is they turned it into the Virgin Mary. But if you look at the source material, she described that, what she saw, as that thing. She said that thing. She did not say Virgin Mary. And she actually even pressed the church to say, it wasn't the Virgin Mary I saw. And yet it became the Virgin Mary and everyone goes to pray to it. It's very similar in holy caves all around the world. These interactions have been taking place for a long, long time and they're not human in origin, but they get twisted around to make them into something more, you could say, religious connotation to them. You know, angels, cupids, cherubs, you know, all those sort of things. But when you look at the source material, just as Professor Diana Posalka has, who had gained access not too long ago to the Vatican archive, which is a dream come true. I mean, that's my bucket list, on my bucket list, to have access to the Vatican archive because it's 53 miles of ancient books down there. And she was there for a few days unattended. I couldn't believe it. What would you do if you were unattended? Well, she did exactly what I would do. She went and looked at the source material of the books, for instance, Francis of Assisi, you know, and many other saints that had these angelic encounters. It turned out they weren't angelic encounters. These were strange beings and strange lights in the sky that interacted with them. But the Bible, it turned it around into cherubs and angels and cupids and things. So we know that this phenomenon has been interacting with humankind for a long, long time. And when we wanted to go out there and realize, doing the investigations and the research and the experiments, we realized that there's a conscious connection with this phenomena. How does it work? Well, UFO is in the sky. You might have several people watching that. It might be a remote location. UFOs, incidents like that, love remote locations. They love the deserts, they love out places where we're not around very often. They like those places. Sometimes they don't like us interfering and going there. Sometimes it seems like, you know, we've overstayed our welcome sometimes, but sometimes we can experience them. When we do, we have now specialized equipment, which is called a flow band. Now, it fits across the top of your head, and it measures your brain wave activity, and it measures it to your mobile phone device. So you're looking at the phone, and you're reading your own brainwave activity. So you see, start to see a UFO, but then if it stops and it starts to interact, you're having some type of experience. It's what you've referred to as the conscious connection or the observer effect. Mm-hmm. What we believe is, a bit like the double slit experiment or dual slit experiment, as they say, we've talked about this in poltergeist incidents. You know, when sometimes, you know, we think something's moved in the corner and we're looking at it and it's not moving. And then as soon as we take our eyes off it, it flings across the room. Because maybe we're quantum locking it in its place by watching it. And then when we stop looking at it, the electrons in it change. Because the dual slit experiment demonstrates that when we're looking at things and observing them, they act differently. So that difference might be locking that item being there until we cast our eyes somewhere else. And then it might just, because we got a lot of people that do report seeing these things.
Lost my camera.
That's okay. But not many people that see it suddenly move from its resting place.
Mm-hmm.
And it could just be a second. That's all it takes, really, to miss its first initiated move.
Right.
So when we start to realize this, that applies also to UFOs, because the UFO is not a craft to carry the phenomena. The mm-hmm. UFO is part and parcel of the phenomena. And when there's that observer connection, that conscious connection with these things, and they recognize that you're observing them, they can lock onto you. And when that happens, something changes within our brain waves. We change from the normal awake state we are to the process of theta waves. Suddenly goes to theta. Now, theta is often, you know, it's often recognized during, just before sleep, you know, daydreaming, those type of experiences. It's putting us purposely in a state where we can be manipulated easily. And we didn't even know that was happening. We only realized that through the experiments and having these conscious connectional experiences with the phenomena that we are adversely affected and we didn't even know. So the big question is that what do we do when we're out there? I mean, there's lots of people that like to go look for UFOs and things like that, and there's no problem with that. But some people sometimes end up in a result that is an experience that they never wanted or didn't want. There are people that said, oh, I had a wonderful experience, and I've had them quite a number of years. But when you take them for hypnosis, you'll find sometimes that these are programmed memories. It's a false memory applied to what really happened, because what really happened was very traumatic for them. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening. So even when we come away with what we think is our belief and our understanding of what we can remember, sometimes that's incorrect and it's not true. Mm-hmm. It's false and it's been applied by the phenomena. Now, the thing is when we're dealing with things like that, is that we've got to say, okay, on occasion, There might be times when people have had bad experiences. How do we guard ourselves? Well, the best way is how Barry Fitzgerald expressed to me is that he's listening to the body. Now, most people and yourself and paranormal researchers will recognize that when they're out on a paranormal investigation and they suddenly walk into a room and then all your hairs stand up on end, you get the goosebumps across your arm.
Right.
Now that is your survival sense. That's survival sense kicking in. We still do have it. Now, the problem is, though, is that most of the time, people aren't getting those reactions. And the reason being is because we live in a society now that has many toxins, many poisons, you know, that we have every day. If it's not in the air we breathe or the food we eat or the, mm-hmm. the drinks that we drink, there's something in there. Now, probably at the top of the list there, the worst one is refined sugar. It's a poison to the body. It also causes adrenal weakness, which means your fight or flight response, which is part of that survival sense, is not going to work properly. Mm-hmm. So the best way and the best advice I can give to anybody, not just regarding the UFO phenomenon and researching it, but also during paranormal investigations, is attune yourself, your body and your skin, as Barry has said, is a tool. It's the greatest tool you have. Forget all the other pieces of equipment. You, yourself, is a very good piece of equipment. If you go in location and don't have refined sugar for 72 hours before you go, then you'll be very, very surprised how your body starts to react. Because, as I said, refined sugar causes adrenal weakness, so that you're not getting that sensory input. Your body's not telling you when it needs to. Because what it's telling you, it says, it might not see something, you might not hear something, but it knows something there, and it's warning you. That mechanism is a safety mechanism. And sometimes it is best to back off, sometimes when it's that bad. Sometimes you can edge around it and try and get some information, evidence-wise, through pieces of equipment. However, this is your first initiation, your body, how it reacts. And your body will tell you. It's very clever how it does it. But people have become ignorant to the fact of not recognizing it or not relying upon it. Myself and Barry do that. Barry's been doing this for a long time. And it's surprising how your body suddenly elevates. You know, it becomes like a detecting tool, in a sense of speaking. I'd say rely on that, because that can happen during the UFO encounters as well. Mm-hmm. And when we experience that, we do know that, okay, well, sometimes we may have stayed more than the time we should have been, you know, overstayed our welcome. There has been times we've been out in the desert, myself and Barry, witnessed the phenomena firsthand. It's interacted with us firsthand. We've reacted in a sense of warning, and we've vacated the location. We don't stay our welcome. On one particular occasion, up on the mountains, in the desert mountains of Palm Springs, joining a particular experiment, we came into contact with a close encounter experience, which just switched on like a light bulb. It was as if it was a huge craft with beautiful lights, hypnotic even, and beautiful, very bright, like welder's arc colors, purple and blue, beautiful. And it was massive and silent, and it just switched on like a light bulb, as if it was already there and just not visible to us. When it appeared, myself and Bo, well, I mean, we were all, there was a few of us there, we were locked onto this. What an incredible sight. But the problem is that it's a bit like the magician's hand. Sometimes you're looking at this puppet show, beautiful lights and distraction, but you're unaware what's going on around you, 360. Never lose that, because sometimes there are things going on that we're unaware of because we're so transfixed on the phenomena. And on this particular occasion, we realized when we looked around that there were things on the ground in the distance, in the darkness of the desert, that looked childlike. That was our cue to get out, and we did. We didn't overstay our welcome. But it was very clever how we do it, because it was our intention was to be kept on this object, and nothing else existed. But luckily for us, we've learned the process of making sure, you know, that we're fully aware of all our surroundings around us. And that doesn't just apply to the UFO phenomenon, it applies to the paranormal as well. People have had, you know, some unpleasant experiences within the paranormal. Some of them are what we might refer to as kind of just your average type of experiences. But definitely, you know, there are unsettling incidents within the paranormal. The same thing applies there. So the more research that we've done over the years now, we've correlated so much that we put the UFO phenomena under the heading of a paranormal act. It is, in a sense, it's another form of paranormal phenomena. Now, are they all connected? Well, that's very interesting, because there was a computer system, artificial intelligence computer system. Now, Professor Jacques Vallée tried to do this back in the 1960s, but the computers weren't very good then, really. So he didn't manage to achieve what he wanted. But the most recent computers, these, you know, the current ones in artificial intelligence, are incredibly powerful. And there was a program known as the CRS system. And for 3 years, they put every piece of information into this artificial intelligence computer about the paranormal, the supernatural, cryptids, earth mysteries, the UFOs, demonology, parapsychology, everything, even the sub-subjects and the sub-subjects to that, until they couldn't think of anything else to put in there. And they pressed the button, because the computer program was devised to look at all the information and come up as to a conclusion as to what's responsible. And they're expecting reams and reams of information to come out, when in fact, it wasn't just like a couple of paragraphs, which was surprising. But it was interesting what it said. The first thing it said is that because it saw so much connectivity between all phenomena, it referred to it as the source. Mm-hmm. It's all one source. The second thing in paragraph said, this source has the capabilities of creating physiological constructs. Well, I'm a physiological construct. The chair is, the table, the world around us is. But if it, and that is just exactly it, because the paranormal can do that. It can be physical in nature. It's a physiological construct. It's also in the ufological phenomenon as well. Mm-hmm. In fact, we even also get it in the cryptid phenomena. We have many people reporting hearing the sound of a cryptid, very large creature, moving bushes around, literally only a yard or two away from them, and yet they're completely invisible. You can't see them, and yet they're hearing them. There are sometimes that they see big creatures, and sometimes they seem to be associated with paranormal and UFOs on occasion. Sometimes they seem to just disappear as if they've just become invisible or non-physical in nature. Footprints have just ended and disappeared, not gone anywhere. You know, there are lots and lots of things where they leave trace evidence behind. Hair, scar, and all sorts of different things. But then that's no different than a UFO leaving prints behind. Or, you know, you've just been slapped by an apparition, a ghost, and it leaves a handprint. It's a physical in nature when they want to be, but not completely. And the computer system looked at it as if it's all connected. The very same thing that our research provided, that it's all seemingly connected in some way. So the big question is, what is the thought? Well, that's a big problem, because it's been misinterpreted over the years, thousands of years. Some people call it has godly powers. That's the problem. These things have godly powers. When we were conducting these experiments and communications with non-human intelligences, we got to the point where we asked, when we come back to our next session. Now, these sessions had to be specially done. And the reason why is because we needed to put in a respite protocol in there. And I'll explain that, because it's exciting when those things are. Can you imagine seeing those things and hearing those things? It's getting that, and it's like, oh my God, the whole world has just changed for me in a day. It's exciting. You want to go back the next day and conduct more experiments. You want to go again and again and again. What happened was the phenomena started tracking back home with us. We were taking it back home, hitchhiker effect. So what we were to do, we had to put in these respite protocols. And that is known as the 2 in 5 or the 3 in 7. That means that only 2 or 3 times a week you could do this, and you had to separate them. You couldn't do them every day, so that it just stops it getting under your skin, because that's what this phenomena does over a long period of time. It's very intriguing, and you want to go back and do it more and more and more and very often. But the downside of that is that the more you're doing this, the more it can get under your skin. And that's when it can sometimes attach itself, becomes an attachment. You'd end up taking it home. That's when it can cause problems. And it can also cause problems in your world. You know, you can have systematic bad luck, really. I mean, things are just like, this isn't normal, this is unusual. you know, there are people which have had those attachments, and that, you know, it not only affects them, but it affects the reality around them as well. It affects the loved ones and the family and all sorts of things. So,
right,
you know, you have to be obviously do it in a safe manner. And this is what we had to do, is put these respite protocols in into effect to stop that from happening. But we did eventually say, can we come back in a couple of days and ask 10 questions? And the reply was, yes, we can. So we went away and we devised. I've always thought, well, you know what? If someone asked me if I could ask 10 questions, I'd reel them out dead easy. No problem. I know what to ask. But on the day when it came to putting down the 10 questions, I had to sit and really think about it, because it was an opportunity here. I might get the answers. Now, I don't know how true they are, but sometimes they'd be deceptive, but I might get the answers. And to be honest with you, I was like a little bit reluctant on some of them, because I thought to myself, do I really want to know the answer? Will it affect me in some way, my belief structure, whatever? Because after all, you know, I'm trying to act scientifically here. But then we all are human beings, and we all have beliefs and, you know, and different things. So I really thought hard about that, and I thought, okay, let's be clever about the questions. So we devised 10 questions, and we went in. And what's interesting is that when we open these channels, once we sustain it to that point, it seemingly, it's, you can get straight back into it. You know, you don't have to build it up again. Mm-hmm. And we managed to get back, and we said, we've got the 10 questions that we want to ask. Can we ask them? And there was a reply, said, yes, we can. So we got the questions out, and just prior to asking the questions, out of the air, very, very loud, very, very clear, mm-hmm. came the responses, all 10 of them, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. They'd answered all 10 questions before we'd even given the answer, the questions to them. They'd answered them all. We didn't even get a chance to ask the question. Mm-hmm. So then we thought, okay, how did they do that? How did they know? Well, the only way for them to have known what those questions were was to obtain it from the sitters themselves, mm-hmm. us, because we know what the questions were. They got it from us, and they answered all questions. And that's interesting, because now we have a real problem, because if we go and see, for instance, a medium or psychic, mm-hmm. and don't get me wrong, they do have abilities, but
sure.
they are communicating with something. Is it the source? Whatever it is, we don't know. We like to think it's spiritual that they're communicating with, but can we really prove it now? Or is it something that is just communicating with them? Because if your uncle is just passed away and you go and see a medium or psychic and you want some, you know, you're trying to talk to them about your uncle who's passed away, and suddenly this psychic or medium tells you something only you would know, that's confirmation that you're believing you're talking or in communications with, or the psychic or the medium is in communication with, this spirit of that person.
Yes.
But that might not be the case, because they might be obtaining it from us and just giving it us back. In other words, take it from us, deliver it to the psychic or medium. The medium and psychic will relay the information, because they are gifted. They can get the information.
Right.
And it goes in this circle. So that's a real big problem for us, because we're trying to think, oh, well, have we got to reevaluate this situation now? What is it we're really communicating with? Can we really prove the spirit in nature? Maybe they are sometimes. Maybe these non-human intelligences also pose to be them occasionally. I like to play the games. Just like, you know, it has many masks. Some people might say, oh, well, it's all demonic and it's the demons and this, that. I believe even that's another mask. Mm-hmm. I think that they play us, because we are puppets on a string, and I think they know that very, very well. And they manipulate us. But they do know about how we work as physical beings, because we've realized that we've had this phenomena, and it's referred to as transplacement. Now, this transplacement, I'll give you an example.
Sure.
EVP, electronic voice phenomena. Now, everybody in the paranormal world has probably captured one. And they come in various degrees, you know, A, B, and C, you know, the best ones. Now, that usually ends there. It doesn't go any further. But if you delve into further research, it starts getting very interesting because we conducted experiments and we had Olympus, the people that make recording equipment and many other things, work with us as our sponsors. We had their technical team with us conducting these experiments, and we had three identical recorders running only for 10 seconds in a complete silent environment. And the results, when we asked a question, could someone please leave a message on the recording device? So three running instantly. You only for 10 seconds, then we stopped it, and played back the first one. We got a male voice, very clear, the first one. On the second one, we got a female voice, very clear. And on the third one, we only got his pops and clicks. But really, we shouldn't have had pops and clicks on it. We don't even know, because we couldn't replicate it. So we don't know right. what that was. How can we have three different things on three different devices in an environment where there's no sound? Well, we know this is where it gets very interesting, because the recording devices we use are devised to record harmonic sounds, you know, from the 20 hertz range to the 20,000 hertz range. Mm-hmm. And you might just go under or over a little bit, depending on which type of model you've got. However, mm-hmm. basically 20 to 20,000 hertz. We're not hearing this, so it can't be harmonic. So if it's not harmonic, how's the recorder recording it? Because the recorder is only devised to record harmonic sound of 20 to 20,000 hertz. It isn't recording it. The phenomena is transplacing it onto it. It's putting it on. So in other words, it'll put a male voice on that one, a female voice on this one, and pops and clicks on this one. It's called transplacement. And to back that up also, we are also pieces of equipment. And the thing is, Collateral, is that sometimes people hear things. They hear their mother shout them. They'll hear somebody talk over the shoulder. They hear it. The person next to them doesn't hear anything. Nobody hears anything, but only you. Does that mean you're going mad? No, it doesn't mean you're going mad. It means that the phenomena can also target us as well. And how it's doing it is because there's no harmonic sound in the air. Is that the eardrum being used? There's no vibration on the eardrum. There's no harmonics. It's placed in from the inner ear. And in the inner ear canal, there's vibrations and liquid. And that is where it targets. And it creates us to hear things. And that's happened so many times. You see, you claim it's telepathic communication. Because when we have UFOs and these occupants, what do people say? They speak to us in our heads. It's telepathic communication. It's not telepathic communication. It's transposition. It's transposing. It's the same process in the paranormal as it is the ufological. It's the same thing. They're utilizing us as pieces of equipment. And it starts to get very interesting because in experiments, what we realized in the skull experiment, there was an old 80s tape recorder, the big ones with the big cassette you put in. Right. Press a few buttons on to record them. You probably remember them. Now, They were capturing audible, they were asking questions, and it was being captured on that little cassette. But what they did is they pulled the power out. So the cassette heads are not moving around. And they asked questions. Then they took that cassette out and put it in a player and played it. They got the response. How did it get onto the tape? It wasn't recording. The power wasn't there. So they took out the recording head of the tape recorder and the power. And guess what? It happened again. No power, no recording head this time to record it onto the actual magnetic tape of the cassette. And yet the response was there. In fact, we didn't even need a tape recorder. They can target it. You know, just as the same as these devices and us. They targeted the cassette tape and they put it directly on it. The only problem is that because it was in a cassette recorder going around and recording, we thought it recorded that normal method. But right. It hadn't. We just thought it had. And when we analyzed all these recordings, not one of them was human vocals. They sounded like human vocals, If you were to hear it, you'd go, oh, that's a man's voice, or that's a woman's voice. But under analysis, it's not human vocal. It's just like there's no vocal cords. It's electronically created. It's manufactured, but it's not got the same frequencies as a voice. It's a voice without a voice, without the method of it. And this is what we find in all these recordings, things that have even direct voice phenomena sometimes. When you analyze them, you're like, look at the frequencies. They're not human vocal frequencies, and yet they sound like it. This is how clever the phenomenon is. It can even interpret language and make us think it's exactly is human language we're hearing, when in fact it isn't. And this happens many, many times in the field of the studies of the UFO and the paranormal. And this is why we've come together and looked at it as a whole, Project Doorway, and we are linking all these things together and realizing that this phenomena is not coming from outer space, UFOs. This phenomena is directly under our noses and can interact with us at any given time. That's what they don't want to tell us. And secondly, age old. And it's all under the heading of paranormal phenomena. It's all interconnected. And of course, those studies are causing are generating a lot of interest now. But it's a new method. And what's the back of that up is that people in the higher authorities, even at the Pentagon now, are referring to non-human intelligences, not ETs anymore. The same non-human intelligences we're getting around science circles and interactions like that. And also that they're talking about the interdimensional, that these things are coming from another reality and entering ours and interacting with us. It's like paranormal phenomena. I'm not talking about your residual stuff, which is kind of recorded events played back. I believe it's probably a more supernatural, unusual, preternatural type phenomena, which we can't understand. But those interactive incidents, where there's interaction between the phenomena and us, they seemingly connected all together. And that's where Project Doorway is, and that's how it's led us over 10 years now into that study, and we're finding more and more out every single day in our research, and it's becoming very popular.
That is the most fascinating study, and I love listening to this. And the EVP thing makes sense. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this the last time you were on, but I had read the book, The Mojave Incident.
Oh, yes.
And that's what really made me start thinking about, like, your Project Doorway. Because when you look at these aliens, you know, they're able to pass through walls. They're able to do this stuff. And I got to thinking about that. And people in the book, they actually talk about the temperature going way down. Like the time trend, you know, when they mess with time. And that's what got me to thinking that maybe, you know, in all honesty, maybe we're not hunting ghosts anymore. Maybe we're hunting aliens.
Maybe it's all one thing. It's just, it is so many different things. I mean, you know, if we go to Ireland, people will talk about fairy folk and small beings, and they're being truthful. They're being truthful, absolutely truthful when they see these things. You know, there are people that see banshees. There are people that see strange creatures. I absolutely do believe them. I've investigated them. I think that these people are being completely authentic when they have these. They're seeing these things. If you write out a scale of how many things are seen around the planet, be it Mothman or Owlman or Lizardman or alien, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of variations. We can't have thousands and thousands of entities coming from thousands and thousands of planets all around us, because how are they getting here? We're not seeing that traffic. They're here. They've been here, and they've been here for a very long time. Maybe, Eve, Charlotte, we're the new kids on the block. Who knows?
Who knows? It's just like these abductions, contactees, I have to watch what I say, have had things where they go aboard the ship and they're seeing holograms. They're seeing holograms of their family members. They're seeing holograms of this. So with what you guys are, the research you're doing, it'll make sense.
It does. It really does. And that's only because we've spent the years in paranormal studies and ufological. And now we can look at the two and go, well, hang on a second. That's the same as that. And that's the same as that. Right. You know, so luckily we've both come from both sides to realize that.
Absolutely. You know, it's always great to have you on, Stephen. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. How can people find you?
They can get in touch with me throughout the only really, to be honest with you, there are so many different ways. I would just say, you know, Google Steve Mera, M-E-R-A. They'll find me on the internet. I'm all over the place. We have new different channels and websites and things.
And you've got a lot of books out. Well, you've got a lot of books out too.
We do, yes. And I'm currently writing a book with Barry Fitzgerald at the moment, and it's all Project Doorway associated. So that should be out next year, hopefully, with a bit of luck.
Fair enough. Well, I'll have to get you back on sometime. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Charlotte. Thank you for having me on, and I look forward to returning.
Have a great evening, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye, love.
Bye-bye. Okay, sorry about that. For some reason, the internet's being the internet, and I lost my camera. If I reset this, I mean, I could have gone ahead and reset it, but we would have had to reset the numbers, and all you guys would have got booted off, so we might as well just leave this alone. I see my internet warning thing up there telling me that my internet's not so good. Told you guys, big news day. Anyway, tomorrow we'll be back at 6:30 p.m. Pacific with Bruce Olive Solheim, and we're going to be talking about aliens and human integration. And also, he's talked with his buddy, his alien friend, Anzar, some more. And we're going to find out what the updates are with that. All right? So I want to thank you guys for coming today. And I really appreciate it. Like I said, it was an early show. I've got to do an MRI at 5. So there you have it. But I will see you guys tomorrow. And I hope you enjoyed this show as much as I did. And it's kind of nice not being on camera sometimes, right? It's kind of different. But anyway, I will see you guys tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. I've got some websites to read off to you guys, for contact for him. As he says, he's all over. You know, all you have to do is Google his name. But he's got some really cool books out too. So I'll give you at least 3 of his websites before I sign off. But if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here. We're just trying to get the word out about our little old show. All right, here we go. Let me get that information to you guys, and then we're gonna call it a day. So here we go. Okay, websites, stevemira.com, zoharmanagement.com, and phenomenonmagazine.co.uk. And there are several books out, and I'll try to read these. One's UTC. It's a training guide. That's all I can tell you. I'm blind. And you've got Paranormal Insight and Strange Happenings. The Paranormal Investigator's Handbook, and the A to Z of the Unknown. And you've got Fire and Whispers, and the Rochdale Poltergeist. And of course, you can get those at his website or Amazon. All right, guys, I will see you tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. I hope you have a great rest of your day for everyone that tuned in at noon. Again, the replay is available for everybody all throughout the rest of the day. All right, see you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific.